Dr. Beatrice Vivaldi Jimenez is our first speaker. I would like to introduce her by way of a previous talk, actually. You may remember that at the 2013 festival, I think Dr. Carlos Villaflor talked about the travels that Graham Greene enjoyed with Father Leopoldo Duran in the 1970s and 80s. On the Iberian Peninsula, am I right in saying that? and Carlos identified all kinds of fascinating details in the course of his research at the Texas Archives, not the least of which, of course, was the amazing enjoyment that Greene and Duran had over a drink. To find all that charted in such detail was quite fascinating, and in itself, a quite exciting discovery, if I may say so. It was quite amazing. And Beatrice will be developing some of those inquiries, but she will also be focusing on a particular artifact that emerged from those travels, which was the Picasso, a notebook that Duran kept and invited Green to contribute to, and all kinds of pieces have come into that. Beatrice holds a doctorate in English philology from Universidad de Jaén, Spain, an MA in Spanish Literature from Loyola University in Chicago. She's published articles in both fields. So without further ado, please can I introduce you to Dr. Beatrice Vivaldi Jimenez.
Thank you very much, Martin, for this kind introduction. And I would like to thank you as well for inviting me to be here in this like wonderful like Graham Greene Festival, and to give me the opportunity to share this time this morning with you all. The title of my talk this morning. Okay. Well, now, let me see. Yeah, I can try to speak louder. The title of my talk this morning is Noun and Not So Noun Literary Outcomes. Now I can hear. Yes? Okay. Noun and Not So Noun Literary Outcomes of Graham Greene's Travels with Father Leopoldo Duran, Monsignor Quixote, and the manuscript book Picasso. In my talk, I intend, well, there will be like a short introduction, then I will try to explain to you like the creation process timeline of this manuscript book. Then I will answer the question, what is the Picasso? Afterwards, like we will just talk about the quotes included by topics, classified by topics. And finally, we'll try to reach to some conclusions. Professor Carlos Villaflor, in his insightful lecture addressed at the Graham Greene's Festival in 2013, already pointed out that Greene's Siberian travels with Father Leopoldo Duran have not received enough attention, either from scholars or from the writer's biographers. The main source of information about such travels is undoubtedly Father Leopoldo Duran's book, Graham Greene, Friend and Brother, which came out in 1994. Father Duran met Greene for the first time in the Ritz Hotel in London in August 1973. However, they had been exchanging letters since 1964. 3 years after their first meeting, Greene agreed to spend his first holiday in Spain with Duran in July 1976. In Professor Villar's words, quote, Greene had such a good time then that the tradition of the yearly picnics was established henceforth, which basically consisted in varied car journeys with a high degree of improvisation and an even higher degree of wine drinking and passionate conversation on human and divine matters, end of quote. Their last trip was in March 1989, and during all that time, The only year in which they did not have their trip was 1988. 15 trips in total, as counted by Professor Villar. These summer jaunts had a considerable effect on Green as a person, as well as a writer in the last stage of his career. The most well-known literary outcome of Green and Father Durand's travels in the Spain of the transition to democracy is undoubtedly Monsignor Quixote, a masterpiece of Green's late period, published in 1982. However, Monsignor Quixote is not the only literary outcome of those trips. In 2012, Georgetown University acquired a collection of documents from Father Durand called Leopoldo Durand's Papers, which is kept at the Special Collections Research Center, Georgetown Library. Among the documents contained in the 49 boxes of the collection, we can find what Father Durand considered his most beloved treasure, a manuscript book by Green that the priest used to call his Picasso. What I intend to do in my presentation this morning is to give you a brief overview of what the Picasso is and the process of its writing. First thing I would like to do is to draw an outline of the origin and process of writing of this manuscript book, taking as a source of information the correspondence between Father Durand and Green, included in the aforementioned collection, Leopoldo Durand's Papers. In the three boxes devoted to the correspondence, we find the letters that Green sent the priest, and also 16 drafts of letters that Father Durand wrote to Green, the first one dated on October 1976, the last on May 1978. Out of the 16 drafts, 8 are not dated, but in them we find references that make it possible to find out the approximate date for each letter. On Green's side, the first letter is dated as early as June 30th, 1964. But most of his letters addressed to Durand in this collection are dated between December 1977 and September 1990. The first reference we find to the Picasso is in a letter that Father Durand wrote to Green on January 22, 1977. In it, Durand asks Green for a favor. Quote, "I have been dreaming of my Picasso for many years. I shall get the nicest album that I can find in Madrid and send it to you, for I shall be the happiest man in the world if you write a short phrase in each sheet, not page, of it. One line or two, about whatever subject you like, without any order at all. I like the Mass more in Latin than in English. Marqués de Murrieta is a great wine. Something that can be written in a second and without thinking." End of quote. In another letter dated on January 29th, Durand insists on this idea. Quote, "I'm posting the album I spoke to you about in my previous letter. Please write a few lines of dedication in the first sheet and a few lines, a thought of yours, in each of the sheets on whatsoever you wish. A short thought without any hurry at all, because I don't like to steal a single minute of yours, which I value so much." End of quote. This doesn't correspond exactly to what Father Durand tells us in part 6, chapter 1 in Grand Green, Friend and Brother. It is a short chapter devoted to the Picasso. In it, the priest states that in this letter he asked Green to write from time to time a brief sentence in an album he would send him, saying also that his request produced an outcome he would have never expected, since he just wanted a simple autographed memory. To this proposal, Green answered in a short letter dated on February 7, 1977, quote, "Of course send me your Picasso." And in the PS it says, like, "I will certainly do what I can with your album," end of quote. Moreover, in another short letter dated on the same day, Green affirms that the leather volume has arrived and says, quote, I have already begun to write in it, end of quote. This coincides with the date Green says that he started the book in the dedication to Father Duran, February 5th, 1977. About a month later, around March 10, Father Duran expresses how happy he feels about this. Quote, "The news is wonderful, and my only comment is to say that you are immensely affectionate and kind to me. The only thing I can do is to ask God for three things for Graham in the daily mass: good health in soul and body, happiness and inspiration for your work," end of quote. In the aforementioned chapter of Graham Greene, Friend and Brother, Duran tells how Green asked him to remind him in his telephone calls and in his letters to write in the Picasso, in case he forgot about it. Despite this, we don't find a second reference to the manuscript book in their correspondence until the end of September, beginning of October 1977, in an undated letter in which Duran wishes Green a happy birthday. In it, Duran says, I quote, "Your trip to Washington with the Panamanian delegation, the passport, etc., is something for an anthology. I am itching to talk with you about everything. Perhaps one or two incidents might fit in my Picasso," end of quote. Again, in October 1977, on a letter dated on the 28th of that month, Duran makes reference to the manuscript book. Quote, "Please don't forget my Picasso, which for me means more than all Picassos," end of quote. The last references to the book on Duran's side are in two letters written in 1978. The first one is dated on February 26, in which he says, quote, "Look after yourself and remember my Picasso from time to time," end of quote. To that, Green answers on March 10, quote, "I haven't forgotten your Picasso, but there are a great many pages to go over, and only occasionally do I think of an entry," end of quote. Finally, in his response to that letter, Duran says, don't hurry with my Picasso, the slower the better. Studying the correspondence in the collection that Green sent Duran, we find no more comments about the Picasso until November 17, 1980. In the PS to our, of a short letter, Green says, quote, "I haven't forgotten Picasso, but it's only occasionally I light on something to put in," end of quote. After that, there is a final reference to the book in a letter dated on February 19th, 1984. Quote, "Your Picasso is not forgotten, but there is still about 45 pages waiting for quotations," end of quote. Since the book has 201 pages, three quarters of the book had been written by that date already. The final pages were filled in before August that year. On the last page of the book that you have here, Green wrote a final dedication with the date he gave the book to Father Duran. Quote, "For Leopoldo on August 9, 84, the day when we heard in Oropesa of the death of Maria," end of quote. As a summary, we can then say that the book was completed in 7 years, between February 1977 and August 1984. After drawing the chronological timeline of its creation process, I shall answer what is probably the most relevant question that has brought me here today. What is exactly the Picasso? To describe it briefly, I can say that it is a 201-page manuscript book of entries in the form of a diary, and that most of the entries are undated. These entries consist mostly of quotations from different authors that were relevant to Green as a person and as a writer. On some pages, we just find a short quotation, and on some others, we find several by the same or different authors. The book in this sense constitutes an anthology of passages from the books he was reading at that time, and that in Green's view should be remembered. In addition, we can find Green's reflections on different issues and some of his poems. It must be mentioned that Father Duran took the time to type each of the pages in the book, which facilitates enormously the work of researchers. Therefore, in the collection at Georgetown's library, we can find the original manuscript copy together with a page typescript that is it is a faithful reproduction of the original, except for some words that Father Duran might have misunderstood reading the original copy. In the chapter of Graham Greene, Friend and Brother, devoted to the Picasso, Duran just presents a summary of what the book is, saying that there are quotations from 138 well-known writers, and then give some examples of the authors Greene quotes from. In his view, Greene chose ideas in which, with which he felt close in terms of aesthetics, theology, or literature. After that, the priest selects some examples of the quotations included that are related to topics such as faith, Greene's spiritual ups and downs, or his literary style. This is the most extensive information Father Duran gives us about the Picasso. Taking into account the relevance of this manuscript book, an exhaustive study needs to be carried out with the aim of publishing an annotated monograph. That is exactly what I intend to do with the collaboration of Father Mark Bosco during a three-month research stay I'm going to do at Georgetown University Library early next year. Father Duran, in his description, mentions that there are quotations from 138 authors. That information is not exact, though. There are quotations from 117 authors, and in many cases, Greene quotes more than once from the same person. Sometimes he even puts the name, the same quote twice on different pages. Most of the audience present here this morning know quite well Greene's work, and some of you are even experts. So I would like to do with you a little exercise, if you don't mind. I'm gonna give you like 2-3 minutes, okay, to talk to the person next to you, okay? And I want you to come up with like a short list of 5 authors you would expect to find in the Picasso that Greene quoted from them, okay? And after the presentation, like we can check whether your guess was right or wrong. Okay?
It is working fine. Okay. Gentleman should have got here early. Where he could hear you, it would be a lot easier. He's deaf, so he sat at the back.
Well.
But there we go.
Okay, okay.
All right, no problem.
Good. Thank you.
No.
Oh, they are doing an exercise.
Oh, very good. What was it all the talking was about? So, what, can I see what part of you read so far?
Yeah, like this. Yeah. And I have like, I mean, it's supposed to be like 45.
Do you mind if I read what you've read so far? So I'm not on.
Yeah.
Oh, good for you for having an exercise. I thought it'd finish. I thought, oh, no.
No. Just they're trying to come up with a list of 5 authors that they would expect to find in the Picasso.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have your list already? Yeah. Time's up. Everyone, yeah, every pair has a list already. Excellent. Good job. Okay, so when planning on this presentation, I had to decide on how to introduce the book to you. Either taking as a basis the authors quoted or the different topics about which the quotations talk. Finally, I opted for the second option. In a preliminary study on, of the content of the manuscript book, I have divided the entries in two main groups: Green's original texts and quotations from other authors. Afterwards, I classify the texts included in the Picasso according to the topics they deal with. In a first approach, I have found the following themes: religion, journalism, Latin America, politics, disloyalty, writing literature, meaning of life, love, and wit quotes. I think one of the best ways to illustrate all this is precisely to reproduce some of the fragments of the book itself related to some of these topics, trying to contextualize them, taking into account the main preoccupations present in Green's work. Let me start with a topic in which I have become interested quite recently in my research on Green's literary work, journalism. As David Hutton argues, Green uses journalist characters as vehicles to critique the practice of journalism and the media in three novels in particular: Stamboul Train, It's a Battlefield, and The Quiet American. In these novels, Green critiques the function of journalism in society, concretely, the responsibility of the journalist in a democracy, and the misuse of the power of media by journalists and editors alike. As you all know, Green spent part of his professional life working as a correspondent covering diverse conflicts around the world for newspapers such as The Listener, New Republic, Paris Match, or The Times. As a journalist, Green faced ethical dilemmas concerning objectivity and involvement when reporting, and he fictionalized his experience at war in his literary work. The most clear example in this sense is The Quiet American. In Ways of Escape, Green states that, quote, "Perhaps there is more direct reportage in The Quiet American than in any other novel I have written," end of quote. In this novel, Green critiques the place of journalism in the architecture of society. There is also a sociological dimension to the use of journalists in Green's fiction, as he examines the power structures attached to the media and the often damaging effects journalists can have on the pursuit of social justice. Green's novels feature an array of journalists, and his fiction shows an insider's knowledge of news gathering and dissemination that is unmatched in 20th century literature. In relation with this, there are two main quotations in the Picasso that are quite relevant concerning Green's criticism of the profession of journalism in his age. The first one is by the Danish philosopher Søren Kierkegaard, and it says,
"If I were a father and had a daughter who was seduced, I should by no means give her up. But if I had a son who became a journalist, I should regard him as lost."
The second and even more significant quotation is by Oscar Wilde.
"There is much to be said in favour of modern journalism. By giving us the opinions of the uneducated, it keeps us in touch with the ignorance of the community."
I find that the function of journalism in the architecture of our current society is of utmost importance, especially in the wake of recent incidents that have shaken the credibility of media due to the dissemination of fake news. News intentionally and verifiably false, whose goal is to mislead the public. In this line of thought, there is still a lot to be analyzed concerning the manifestation of Green's complex journalistic imagination in his fiction, so paramount to his worldview. A second topic I would like to share with you is Green's reflections about writing and what it means to be a writer. For Green, to a certain extent, writing was a way of escape from boredom. There's a famous statement in this line in Ways of Escape.
Writing is a form of therapy. Sometimes I wonder how all those who do not write, compose, or paint can manage to escape the madness, melancholia, the panic and fear which is inherent in a human situation.
In the Picasso, we find the same idea in different fragments that Green includes. I will give you three relevant examples. The first one, a quotation by Saul Steinberg.
The life of the creative man is led, directed, and controlled by boredom. Avoiding boredom is one of the most important purposes. It is also one of the most difficult because the amusement always has to be newer and on a higher level. Not everything that amused me in the past amuses me so much anymore.
Significant as well, in this sense, is a quotation by Gustave Flaubert.
The burden of existence does not weigh on our shoulders when we are composing. It is true that the fatigue and the feeling of desertion that follow are all the more terrible.
Finally, a significant quotation by the Argentinian writer Jorge Luis Borges that we also find in the Picasso.
I write for myself and for my friends and to ease the passing of time.
In relation to the topic of writing, we also find quotations on the relationship between the writer and his work. Green was rarely satisfied with his work, and he went through periods of creativity block quite often. Connected with this theme, I have chosen four quotations in the Picasso that I think best represent the way Green felt about the process of writing. The first one is by Italo Calvino and says,
"A written book will never console me for what I destroyed in writing it."
In this same line, we find a significant fragment by William James on the difficulties of writing some works.
A book hanging so long on one's hands at last gets outgrown and even disgusting to one.
A third one is by Gustave Flaubert and is related to Green's dissatisfaction towards his work.
The more experience I acquire in my art, the more tormenting that art becomes. The trouble is, imagination remains stationary while taste matures.
Finally, I have chosen a statement that Green quotes from Thomas Mann related to the difficulties for writers to overcome creativity blocks.
I dread the day when I shall again be shut up alone with my work.
In the group of original writings by Green, we can also find a relevant text related to mental blocks, dated on May 3, 1978, a year after he finished The Human Factor.
After the right number of drinks with a snack, meal and alone, perhaps two bottles of Carlsberg and three Swedish akvavit and a tin of sardines, I begin to believe that I can carry on. An idea may come. Perhaps the last book has not been written, but tomorrow morning, the euphoria will have left me.
In addition to this, connected with the topic of writing, Green chooses quotations that speak about the relationship of the between the writer and criticism. It is well known that Green did not appreciate, in many cases, the interpretations that different critics put on his work. His feelings towards critics are represented in some of the fragments he decided to write on the Picasso, like this one by Charles Baudelaire.
It would be unthinkable for a critic to become a poet, and it is impossible for a poet not to contain within himself a poet.
Or this other by George A. Birmingham.
A surprisingly large number of people feel it necessary to tell an author that his works are great and good. A still larger number suffers from an irresistible desire to possess an author's autograph. And then there are those who like to point out mistakes, even spelling mistakes, in published books.
In this sense, Green's reluctance to give interviews is well known, as well as his refusal to discuss his work. The exception to this is Marie-Francois Lenz's The Other Man Conversations with Graham Greene, published in 1983. However, in the preface to this book, the author herself declares that the book, quote, could be an admission of failure in wanting to penetrate the recesses of this paradoxical personality. One runs into a wall, a floating wall, end of quote. Philip Stratford also refers to Green's ambiguity, quote, behind a pose of extreme diffidence, he diabolically tells one critic one thing, another another, end quote. Connected with this, I have chosen a relevant quotation by Miguel de Unamuno written in the Picasso that I think clarifies Green's misleading relationship with criticism that Stratford pointed out.
If you write, let no one know how you write, nor at what hours, nor your way of doing it.
A third topic I would like to share with you is the process of growing old and the approach of death. We need to remember that Green completed this manuscript between 1977 and 1984. That is, he started when he was 73 and finished it when he was 80, 6 years before his death. We need to remember that Green went through a quite difficult period in his life between 1979 and 1985, doing battle, with the French mafia. All this constant fight was exhausting for him and made him age faster than he might have if he had not been confronting the dark side of Nice. Given that Green was writing in the Picasso during this time, the presence of getting old and death in the passages he chose to write in the book comes as no surprise. The first quotation I have chosen in relation to this topic is an excerpt from Growing Old, a poem by the Victorian poet Matthew Arnold.
What is it to grow old? It is to spend long days and not once feel that we were ever young. It is to add, immured in the hot prison of the present, month to month with weary pain. It is last stage of all, when we are frozen up within and quite the phantom of ourselves, to hear the world applaud the hollow ghost which blamed the living man.
This is the first line and the last part of the poem. Before, the poetic voice has been wondering about what is to grow old and has said what growing old is not. Green chooses the last stanzas because in them we find what means for him to grow old. By the end of life, one will come to hate their own body, blaming our aging prison for our loss of spirit, strength and emotion. Death, as I said before, is often present in the passages included in the Picasso. As examples of this, I have chosen some texts that talk about this topic. The first one is an excerpt from William Wordsworth's poem Extempore Effusion upon the death of James Hogg.
Like clouds that rake the mountain summits, or waves that own no curbing hand, how fast has brother followed brother from sunshine to the sundust land.
In this sixth stanza of the poem, there's a reference to many poets that Wordsworth had admired and counted as friends, excuse me, Hoda died in a short span of time before he composed this poem in November 1935. Another example is an excerpt from The Two Highwaymen by Wilfrid S. Blunt.
I have known no trace with time, nor time's accomplice death. The fair world is the witness of a crime repeated every hour. For life and breath are sweet to all who live, and bitterly the voices of those robbers of the heath sound in each ear and chill the passerby. What have we done to thee, thou monstrous time? What have we done to death that we must die?
A third example, a statement by the Russian dissident writer Andrei Sinyavsky, talks about how human beings should face death.
We will ask fate for an honest, seemly death and do our best to go to meet it so that we may properly fulfill our last and most important task, the task of dying, the task of our whole life.
However, not all the references to death are gloomy. As an example, I will share with you a sentence Green writes in the Picasso, again by Andrei Sinyavsky.
One ought to die in such a way that one's last shout whisper is, hurrah, we're off.
In connection with the topic of existence and death, I would like to focus now on what probably is the most important theme in the Picasso, if we take into account the number of texts related to the to this topic. It doesn't come as a surprise that such topic is religion and spiritual matters, an ever-present concern in Green's existence. There are about 80 quotations from many different authors that are related to God, Jesus, salvation, belief, faith, doubt, and in some occasions, and in Green's novels, especially in the last period, quotations in which religion and social justice merge. Let me give you some examples of the fragments included in relation with these topics. In the different references to God, we find the image of a merciful God. Green believed that his obligation as a novelist was to represent people as he encountered them and understood them. Indeed, this sense of obligation extended to God, an integral, though ambiguous, element in his world. As he once explained to a journalist, quote, I have often tried in my work to show the mercy of God. You cannot show it by portraying only virtuous people. What good is mercy to the virtuous? It is in the drunken priests that you can see mercy working, end quote. In this by Walt Whitman.
Sorry, I can read.
He judges not as the judge judges, but as the sunlight falling around a helpless thing.
Green's relationship with God was always complex. In a sort of life, he narrates briefly his experience of receiving religious instruction from Father Trollope before embracing Catholicism. He states that his primary difficulty was that he couldn't believe in the existence of God. He could believe in the historical figure of Christ, but not in God. It was on the ground of a dogmatic atheism that I fought and fought hard, end of quote. In the Picasso, we still see Green's difficulties in believing in the existence of God when he quotes from Andrei Sinyavsky.
Give me news of you, Lord. Make me sure you hear. I'm not asking for a miracle, just for the smallest possible signal. Let a beetle fly out of that bush. Now, a beetle, what could be more natural? No one would suspect. It would be enough. I'll be sure you hear me and are letting me know. Just say yes or no. Am I right or wrong? And if I'm right, train as it passes behind the woods hoot four times. It's so easy for a train to hoot four times, and then I'll know.
In this sense, this prayer by Charles Peguy that Green says John Donne could have written is also significant. That's the part in the French, but like there is another part, I mean, that Green translated himself into English.
O God, whom one cannot recognize, O God, to which all testify, listen to the last words my mouth will pronounce. If I have deceived myself, it is in looking for your law. My heart can wander far, but it is filled with you.
Green's fundamental difficulty as a Christian was that he doubted his own ability to love God. To make the leap of faith, the unconditional surrender that is referred to in a quotation from Soren Kierkegaard's journals that Green writes in the Picasso.
When the bonds were broken, my thoughts were these. Either you throw yourself into the wildest kind of life, or else become absolutely religious. But it will be different from the parson's mixture.
Belief, faith, and doubt are three concepts that are recurrent in the way Green experienced religion. At the time he published A Sort of Life in 1971, he was 65. At that age, he declared that he couldn't remember the arguments that had convinced him, quote, of the existence of something we call God. With the approach of death, I care less and less about religious truth, end quote. For Green, any authentic experience of faith is always nourished by doubt. This is perfectly stated when Green quotes in the Picasso from Miguel de Unamuno's The Agony of Christianity.
A faith which does not doubt is a dead faith.
Green was never convinced that the prescriptions of the Catholic faith were absolutes, and as a consequence, he had problems with some church teachings. He never felt comfortable with the concept of hell. On this topic, he quotes in the Picasso from the English poet Leigh Hunt's autobiography.
If an angel were to tell me to believe in eternal punishment, I would not do it, for it would be better become me to believe the angel a delusion than God monstrous.
End of quote. Furthermore, Green never felt comfortable either with the concept of mortal sin, since in his own words, quote, it must by definition be committed in defiance of God. End of quote. In relation to this, Green includes a mocking quotation from Kierkegaard's journals in the Picasso.
Most people believe that the Christian commandments, for instance, to love one's neighbour as oneself, are intentionally a little too severe, like putting the clock on half an hour to make sure of not being late in the morning.
Green's faith always maintained a paradoxical relationship with belief regarding the dogmatic teaching of Catholicism. He commonly referred to himself as a lapsed Catholic or even a Catholic agnostic. In this sense, there are two fragments in the Picasso that need to be highlighted. The first is by the American Catholic writer Flannery O'Connor.
What people don't realize is how much religion costs. They think faith is a big electric blanket, and of course, it is the cross. It is much harder to believe than not to believe. If you feel you can't believe, you must at least do this. Keep an open mind. Keep it open toward faith. Keep wanting it. Keep asking for it. And leave the rest to God.
The second quotation I have chosen is by the French writer Henri de Modelin.
My attitude towards Catholicism has always been like that of the Mediterranean towards its beaches, now caressing and now retreating, or like a cat biting and licking at one and the same time.
There's no doubt that Green identified himself with this stance towards Catholicism. Among the group of Green's original texts in the Picasso, there is also an enlightening one that I wanted to share with you. Although it is quite long, I think it's worth reading it.
I am to a certain extent an agnostic Catholic. I'm quite unable to believe in hell, which contradicts my faith that if there is a God, he must be a loving God, or else why bother to invent the devil? As a separate person? Nor do I accept Rome's teaching on contraception, which in this poor, overcrowded world goes against all reason, a teaching which in Catholic countries, or rather among Catholics, is one of the principal reasons of abortion. One must distinguish between faith and belief. I have faith, but less and less belief in the existence of God. I have a continuing faith that I am wrong not to believe, and that my lack of belief stems from my own faults and failure in love. Now, paradoxically, in the affair of Father Hans Kung and Father Schickelbeck, I find myself grateful to those two priests for reawakening my belief, my belief in the empty tomb and the resurrection, the magic side of the Christian religion, if you like. Perhaps that is the unconscious mission of Father S. when he writes of the resurrection as being a kind of symbolic statement of the spiritual impression which the apostles experienced after the crucifixion. I remember again in St. John's Gospel, the run between Peter and John towards the tomb. Peter leading until he lost breath, and then the younger man arriving first and seeing the linen cloths, but afraid to go in, and then Peter overtaking him. It's like a reportage. I can be interested in the reportage of a mystery. I'm completely uninterested, even bored by spiritual symbol equally unhistoric in King Kung's sense of the reportage. The attempt to get rid of the fairy tale makes me, for the first time in years, begin to believe in it again. I am against the condemnation of Father S, for he has communicated to belief to at least one Catholic.
To finish with the topic of religion, there are some passages in the Picasso that reaffirm Green's conception that Catholicism and seeking social justice should walk hand in hand. It is known that Green valued positively Pope Paul VI's encyclical letter Populorum Progressio in its insistence on the necessary function of the Church in promoting social justice. Green quotes from Populorum Progressio in the Picasso.
The earth's goods must be divided fairly, and this right of everyone to a just share comes first. Even the right to private property and the right to free enterprise must yield to justice.
In this same line of thought, Green also quotes from Helder Camara, one of the main figures of liberation theology in Latin America.
When I give food to the poor, they call me a saint. When I ask why the poor have no food, they call me a communist.
I would like to finish my description of the topics in the Picasso sharing with you some quotations related to what Green himself called the virtue of disloyalty, a paradox that constitutes a key to his thinking and that Professor Weiss is going to address in his lecture. Loyalty and betrayal is never clear-cut for Green. Loyalty could be subverted and its opposite could become a virtue, for no side was always in the right. This borderland of conflict, social, political, and religious, became Green's primary interest throughout his writing career. In connection to this last topic, I have chosen two significant quotations. The first one is by Herbert Reed in a letter.
I suppose my individualism will always prevent me from being anything but an unwilling passenger in any regimented crew. I'm not proud of my isolation, but find it inevitable.
The second and final fragment, again by Charles Peguy, constitutes a perfect summary of Green's conception of the importance of being disloyal.
The honest man must be a perpetual renegade. The life of an honest man must be a perpetual infidelity.
I hope that this overview of the Picasso has given you an idea of what this manuscript book is. It is a partial, fragmentary work and even somehow oblique. As I said at the beginning of this talk, we are not before an usual diary. On the contrary, we find digressions and annotations which are related to Green's thought in the last years of his life. Going back to the dedication of the book to Father Durand, Green states that this manuscript is a very commonplace book. Taking into account all the topics we have mentioned, all key to Green's thought, I conclude my talk questioning this statement. This is not a commonplace book, but a book that is worth studying since it's leading through moments of true humanism that are at the level of Green's intellectual height. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Beatrice. That was marvelous.